crater is different. Oh, and I see some really different rocks. A big one.
Pete sees a big rock.
Looks like bedrock.
Looks like bedrock, he says.
What a crater. Ow. Oh, boy. Hey, Al, look, come on over here.
I'm coming.
This is a crater about 60 meters across.
Sounds interesting, Al. And Pete, sounds as though you're getting down to bedrock. Is that a firm?
Yeah, they got to be bedrock, and there's one at the bottom. As a matter of fact, well, there's some big fragments of pictures. It looks to me like stuff is melted in the bottom of it. I can't swear to that, but I'll get you some pictures.
Pete says it looks like some stuff has melted in the bottom of it, this bench crater about 60 meters across. They're going down in it. They've traversed now south of the head some 150 to 70 meters.
5, 6. Okay, let me go around here a little bit here.
The astronauts now have been outside on this exploration for an hour and 9 minutes thus far. And you're listening to the voices of astronauts Pete Conrad and Al Bean coming to you from the surface of the moon. And we're broadcasting this to you live as it's coming back to Earth over the facilities of the Voice of America.
Rhett Turner, we'll ask you to stand by at the Manned Spacecraft Center as we return to our VOA Apollo News Center here in Washington, the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. At the moment, Pete Conrad and Alan Bean, for the second time, walking about the surface of the moon collecting samples. They've been outside their spacecraft a little over an hour. We'll return to their conversations from the moon and for a description of that following this summary of late world news.
Apollo 12 astronauts Charles Conrad and Alan Bean, still eager and high-spirited, have begun their second and last moonwalk. The traverse will cover about 1,500 meters across several lunar craters and will finally take them to the site of the Surveyor 3 lunar probe, which soft-landed on the moon in April 1967. They will retrieve the Surveyor's television camera and also cut away sections of its metal tubing for return to Earth. The second moonwalk, which will take a minimum of 2 hours and may be extended to 3 or 4, is primarily a rock-gathering mission. Ground control told the moon explorers to try to roll a rock down a crater and photograph it. Commander Conrad replied with a laugh, "Yes, sir, we're going to rock and roll." The astronauts will also inspect a lunar atmospheric detector, one of the 5 scientific experiments they set up Wednesday, to see why it is not functioning properly. News dispatches from Chile report that armed forces units have been placed on a state of alert in Santiago province. President Eduardo Frei is reported to have met with his Superior Security Council, made up of top-ranking members of the armed forces and police. The president is quoted as saying that the situation is tranquil in the country. There has been unrest in the armed forces, who are demanding faster action on pay increases, which they were promised after a recent mutiny of one unit of the army. Britain's disarmament negotiator, Lord Chalfant, says the United States-Soviet strategic arms limitation talks in Helsinki may decide whether the world can survive this century without a nuclear disaster. He said during a disarmament debate in the UN General Assembly main political committee that if the Helsinki talks fail, repercussions of that failure will spread far beyond the boundaries of the two superpowers. Lord Chalfant also stressed that the Helsinki talks will affect disarmament negotiations underway at Geneva and the United Nations. American and Soviet representatives will hold the second working session of preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation in Helsinki Thursday. Both sides have described the private talks in the Finnish capital as preliminary and exploratory, to define the basis for future substantive negotiations. The two sides have also said statements will be issued only when developments warrant. Republican Senator George Aiken of Vermont says he thinks the United States is in a position to announce another withdrawal of troops from Vietnam by the end of this year. The ranking Republican member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee made the comment after a White House meeting with President Nixon. Senator Aiken said he felt the administration is now definitely on the right track in trying to bring peace to Southeast Asia, and that there has been considerable progress in that direction. Police in Monrovia are searching for the assassin of the Reverend Dillard Brown, American Episcopal Bishop of the Diocese of Liberia. The bishop was shot to death in his office Wednesday. His business manager, Claude Nadar of Syria, also was killed. A secretary, Patricia Newis of Britain, was critically wounded. The bishop's chauffeur and a cleaning man were also wounded, and police say there is no apparent motive for the murders. Representatives of American refugee relief organizations, public and private, were told that the world refugee problem has not eased, but instead has grown in size in the past 10 years. This was stressed at the Washington meeting of the National Conference on World Refugee Problems, in messages from President Nixon, Pope Paul, the Dalai Lama, Dr. Norris Wilson of the United Nations Committee for Refugees, and others. President Nixon, noting the conference marks the 10th anniversary of establishing the UN's World Refugee Year, said the resettlement of refugees has been a rare and inspiring international achievement. But he said their place, unfortunately, has been taken by others, and there now are at least 3 million more homeless than there were a decade ago. President Nixon said that the United States, throughout its history, has met the challenge of refugees driven from their homelands and will continue. But he said the refugee problem is worldwide and must be the responsibility of every nation. The superstar of world soccer, Pelé of Brazil, kicked the 1,000th goal of his professional career in the jam-packed Maracanã Stadium of Rio de Janeiro Wednesday night. Pelé scored the historic goal in the second half of the match between his Santos team against the Vasco da Gama club on a penalty kick. 100,000 fans roared when the ball sunk into the net. Santos won the game. To mark the event, Pelé was to receive a golden soccer ball. The defending champion Engelbert team of Congo-Kinshasa defeated Conakry of Guinea 4-0 Wednesday in their first semi-final match in the Congolese capital for the African club's soccer title. The Congo-Kinshasa team led at halftime 1-0. The teams will meet November 30th in Conakry for the second match. The South African Springbok rugby team played its first trouble-free match of their 25-game British tour Wednesday at Ebu, Wales, but were defeated by Gwent 14-8. It was the third loss in 5 games for South Africa. There were no anti-apartheid shouts from the fans as there were in earlier games. The French Defense Ministry says the government does not plan to send any new reinforcements to the Central African state of Chad. The decision follows reports of growing criticism of French involvement and a pledge by French Foreign Minister Maurice Schumann that France would do everything possible to limit its presence in Chad. About 2,000 French troops were sent to the African nation at the request of President Tambay to help put down an uprising by nomadic rebels. That's the news. Gene Peterson reporting.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That flight, some 132 hours and 48 minutes into the mission. At the moment, astronauts Charles Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are in the midst of their second EVA, their second moonwalk. They've been out on the lunar surface this time about an hour and 18 minutes. They're moving about the lunar surface, ranging as much as 1,500 meters away from the Intrepid, the landing craft, picking up samples and giving us a running commentary of the events, the actions that they take. The voice communications have been excellent throughout this second EVA. Before we go to correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, I'd like to reintroduce our colleague from NASA. I'm not sure that I introduced him during this special broadcast because Pete Conrad and Alan Bean decided to start their moonwalk about 2 hours earlier. They had a sleep period and apparently slept quite well, but they were excited and anxious to get on with the job. Our NASA expert, John Hammersmith, a senior systems engineer. John, very shortly, well, I would say in about another 45 minutes, the two astronauts will move over to the edge of the crater that holds the Surveyor 3 spacecraft. That spacecraft, unmanned spacecraft, that landed back in 1967. What do they want to check out on the spacecraft, and what will they bring back from the craft itself?
Well, one of the things, Bill, that we have been interested in not only with spacecraft sitting on the moon, but with spacecraft in orbit, is we'd like to have some idea of how the surfaces degrade, particularly high-quality optical surfaces. So many of our instruments that we put into space, and instruments, of course, that we're using on the moon, have highly polished optical surfaces. So that one of the things that we want to get back from this spacecraft are some of these highly polished glass parts, which have been exposed to cosmic rays, to solar wind, to micrometeorites, probably, and have an opportunity to study them. Studying a smooth surface that has been exposed to a process of erosion gives you sort of a clean field at the erosion process. Looking at the rocks that have come back so far from Apollo 11, it is people who examined these things feel that they're certain that there is an erosional process at work on the moon, which is like nothing, which has no counterpart here on Earth, and we don't understand the mechanism. Similarly, they're going to bring back, cut off some aluminum tubing, which was used for supporting some of the equipment on the spacecraft, and they have a similar aim there.
And the television camera, too, I believe.
The TV camera.
Try to bring back.
They're going to try to bring back. This is the camera that was on the Surveyor, again, and with the idea of studying an instrument, a complex instrument, actually, which has been exposed to the space environment for a long period of time. This will help us to better design spacecraft instrumentation for long periods of time with high degree of reliability and so on. One of the interesting things to me that something a little bit different than the sorts of things we've been talking about, which is geology and erosion and this sort of thing, is that they're going to snip off some pieces of cable. The Surveyor cabling, when it left the Earth, had a known biological load. And to put it in plain English, there were bacteria in it.
Yes.
And the extent of the bacteria, the type of bacteria, and so on were rather carefully assessed prior to launch. And of course, the biologists would like to see now, after almost 2.5 years exposure to the lunar environment, see whether there are any of these bugs are living yet, and try to get some idea as to whether anything could survive for that length of period, that length of time in the lunar environment. In addition to that, we have the Surveyor dug up some soil, and we know what the trench looked like from the TV pictures. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to take photographs again of that trench and of the material that was dug up, again with the idea of assessing the effects, these erosional effects over a period of time, so that And in addition, then, we would like to bring back some of the soil that is immediately under the piece of equipment that was used to make a rough chemical analysis of the soil. This would give us some idea of how well that instrument did its job, again, with the obvious intent of enabling us to better design such equipment in the future.
Well, thanks, John Hammersmith. We'll be back to you often during this Voice of America live coverage of the second EVA for Apollo 12. Astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean have been on this lunar walk now for about 1 hour and 24 minutes. Let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, Texas, to pick up more of the conversations from Conrad and Bean and for a description from correspondent Rhett Turner.
The astronauts are now moving on farther to the east. They've had a little trouble finding a crater called Sharp Crater.
We're estimating a diameter of Sharp Crater, Pete, for about 40 feet.
40 feet. We have this...
40 feet. Now, this may be it. This is it. That'll be it.
They're not sure this is it.
Yeah, look at that.
The sun...
It's raised up about, what'd you say, 2 feet? And trouble is, I'm running zero phase. It's like I could never see. Oh, yeah, look at the...
Now, what he means by zero phase is the sun is directly behind his back, and so he has no shadows in searching for and coming up on this crater, which is about 20 meters, 15 to 20 meters wide.
Houston.
Go ahead, Pete.
Like blast effect coming out of it. Looks like it's got blast effect radial all the way around. This has got to be fairly fresh to the... Look at that, Al. Isn't that neat?
Looks like a blast effect crater, he says.
Okay. I don't know what to set it on. 74, I guess. I'm not that far away. Boy, the rim is soft here, isn't it? There is. Quite a bit softer than the others. But look at the radial spray pattern.
The geologists on Earth knew that this crater was going to be very interesting, and so they wanted the men definitely to go quite a distance from the lunar module to find it, and this is a description of what they found.
We'd like to get the trench site sample there, and you can hold off on that double core tube until you get over to Halo Crater.
Okay, good.
They're calling this Sharp Crater because it is very sharply defined, and Al and Pete both agree that it does appear to be a young one. Al says we're supposed to be looking for Copernican rays.
Houston, there's no way to tell a difference
at this point.
Contact-wise. You agree, Al? There's no way. Now, this one is fresh enough so that you can see, like you say, some of the rays. But any crater older than this, there doesn't appear to be any way to tell the material from inside the crater from that was there when, right on the surface before the crater was formed. There's no differentiation at all.
That's Al Bean playing geologist.
Let's see.
Describing
ray
patterns from this fresh crater.
Al, we're looking for the trench site sample. That includes the environmental sample, a trench, and the gas analysis you can put in there, too.
There's a very gentle crater just about 15 meters to the south of this one, which is called Halo Crater.
That's what it says.
That's affirmative. That'd be perhaps the easiest and the best place to do it. And you can get that one core tube down in the bottom of the trench.
Rhett, this observation has some real implications to the geologists who are interested in the lunar interior. They had a meteorite impact or whatever forms one of these craters, presumably throws out material from deep inside or from some distance underneath the surface, at least.
That's the reason that they had been instructed to go to this one specifically, because it was a young one, and as Pete says, it appears to have a blast effect. It's young. It has ejecta material, which form rays. They're going to dig a trench
I think the instinctive expectation is that the material would look different somehow, and what they're saying is that they can't tell the difference.
They're saying that the features are much different. However, I don't know. They're digging down for a different material.
Wait a minute, I gotta do it over here. Got. Hey, Houston?
Pete, go ahead.
You take a picture before, Al? No? Yeah. Nothing, Houston. We're okay. I'll take one right now, Pete.
They were both impressed there a moment ago by how more sharply defined is the material from this crater, the crater itself, and the ejecta material thrown out.
Only in the case of the young one. Only in the case of the young one, isn't that right?
We're talking about the very young, sharp crater where they are right now, taking a core tube sample. They've described the features of the crater as very, very different, but we haven't gotten a report on whether the material, the actual soil, seems to be much different or not.
Along with those pictures.
I wonder how many million years old they consider young.
I think the scientists thus far have said 4,500,000, 4.5 billion years plus as their best estimate thus far.
That's for the age of the moon.
And the material brought back on Apollo 11. As to what would be a young crater, boy, 1 billion years, that's young.
Okay. All right. Now, what do you want to do, fill that with dirt?
Fill the big container with dirt.
They're filling a container with this material from the sharp crater.
Pete, we copy you on 105.
Be careful now.
In case it is different. Now,
it didn't go in. That's okay.
They're having trouble getting really the core tube to go into the surface.
No, you can't.
This material,
they have to,
this material seems to compact very, very quickly. You begin to drive a tube into it, it seems dusty, and very quickly you don't get down very far, and it's like going into rock.
Grab that candle closer to the thingamajig there.
Yeah.
When you lift it up. Okay, we need some more. There you go. Wait a minute. That's the game.
It's like a very fine, tightly packed sand, isn't it?
It's something
even,
like that,
or
Bill.
Silk.
A sand that tends to coalesce very easily.
One more scoop ought to do it,
this,
though.
Incidentally, is consistent with the experience on Apollo 11, and it... It pretty well knocks out one theory about the lunar surface, which held that they ought to be able to drive a tube into that to a depth of 6 feet anyway with their bare hands, without a hammer or anything. They can barely get it in 18 inches.
Pete was having a little trouble there. There's the distinctive Conrad laugh again. He was having some trouble with the core tube. He had to auger it a bit, twist it around and round, and then hammer on it some more.
It's quite a job to get it in.
They remember Neil Armstrong commented on when he was on television on the moon trying to take a core sample. He was beating the thing with a hammer, and he said, "I hope you people back there notice how hard this is."
I think that was Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz,
yeah.
Right on the top. This dirt came from about 8 inches down.
That was Pete Conrad saying the dirt came from about...
8 inches down, and what's the sample bag number on that?
8 inches down, 8 inches deep.
This is the deep trench sample in the... right there. And lower it. Isn't that ridiculous? And this is a million times. Something's jamming on it. It's not slight.
They're working with some of the hand tools. Something's jamming.
I'll tell you what's the matter. That thing is getting friction. Wait.
Pete says this is getting some friction.
Hold it tight. I'll get it. You know. It's at it. It's been a while.
At this moment, they are now about... 450 kilometers straight line distance, 450 meters from the limb. This is just about as far away as they will get from the limb. The traverse will take them some 1,500 meters away, but this is in a looping course.
Yes.
In straight line distance from their present position at Sharp Crater back to the limb, should they get into trouble, is about 430 to 450 meters.
Can we get your photo numbers?
Mission Control asking for some confirmation of...
And this is core tube number two.
Core tube number two.
I'll need the... There you go. That'll be a good place, Pete.
There at the mission console now is astronaut Ed Gibson, I believe, instead of Jerry Carr.
Okay, just gonna try to almost drive it without a hammer. But if you'll hand it to me, I'll get it in just a second.
Al says he's trying to drive it without a hammer. They're going to try the hammer on core tube number two now. Now, after this, they will go on. After they work around this sharp crater, they will make a short loop out to the east, some 40 or 50 meters away, come back to the Halo crater, and then work their way back past Bench crater to the east, back to the Surveyor crater. And this will take an hour or so. They've been there in space, outside on the surface, for 1 hour and 34 minutes thus far. Working on that second core tube sampler.
All right. This dirt's gotten on my camera, and I can't see the settings anymore. I'm going to have to do something about that.
Al Bean says that the dirt has gotten on his camera, and he can't see the settings on the camera. He's going to have to dust it off. Anytime the astronauts say anything, their voices automatically actuate their transmitters back to Earth so we can hear them. I noticed that tonight, during this particular EVA exploration period, the circuit with Dick Gordon in the command module, Yankee Clipper, has been slightly isolated, and it is not as loud. If you do hear Mission Control talking to Dick Gordon, it will be very low in the background, so that the astronauts on the surface of the moon are more predominant to our ears. The TV camera, the color TV camera, is inoperative. It failed last night, has been clipped. The lead has been clipped, and the camera has been stowed for return to Earth.
Okay, just a minute.
The astronaut's now working on that second core tube sampler, some 430 to 50 meters away from the land.
Okay, Houston, what else do you want here?
Question back to Houston.
Okay, we show you should have gotten in the turn psych sample, the core tube sample from the end, from the bottom, and also the gas analysis sample.
Okay, we need some little rock fragments for that, please.
Roger, that's surface rock fragments.
Okay, just a second. Yeah, we're gonna get a hold of them. We've got to find it first.
We want some a small bit of the surface material to be sealed up for and used for analysis of gaseous material in the lunar soil. They're right on the timeline.
What do they mean by the trench site sample?
The trench is a small trench dug with the scoop, and they actually drove. They got some of the soil from the bottom of a trench about 8 inches deep. They found a
Roger, copy. You got some rocks
rock
in the gas
there.
Analysis, and would you also confirm that you've gotten the environmental sample?
Request from Houston, do they have an environmental sample? They're proceeding precisely on the timeline for the EVA as scheduled.
And I'm trying to find a little rock. Yeah. A little rock? There's a neat one. There it is right there.
They're ahead of schedule overall in the overall flight plan of the mission, but they are right on the timeline for the activities while they're out on the surface.
And in about 25 minutes, we should have the climax of this.
And all looks good.
We should have the climax of this lunar walk with the going down to descending down the side of the crater to the site of the Surveyor 3.
Just word from Houston to Al that his water situation in his Bliss is back up to nominal. It's operating properly. The portable life support system is telemetering data back to Earth through the lunar module, and the engineers and mission control are keeping an eye on the condition of this vital system while the astronauts go about their geological sample.
Red, have you said anything to our listeners about the fact that they're wearing water-cooled underwear?
Oh, we've described that many times, John. Yeah. That water-cooled underwear, you want to describe it again?
Stand by.
Did you want to go through that again for them?
Well, it's a way of removing the heat load more effectively from their suits. They're working, and their bodies tend to heat up. The normal way the heat is removed from the human body is through perspiration and the evaporation of perspiration. Our earlier suits, which we used in the Gemini and the Mercury programs, remove this heat by circulating the oxygen through the suits and then exhausting it. This has a comparatively limited capacity for removing heat, and we were having problems with the astronauts overheating. And so this water-cooled underwear actually has tubes of water sewn into it, and cool water is circulated through the suits, and it is much more efficient for removing the heat of their bodies. Interestingly enough, this can cause a different kind of problem. A man, who, if he's not being careful, can actually work so hard that he can exhaust himself and yet not realize it because he's not overheating. The usual cue to one of the cues to overwork is the way your body overheats. These men obviously are not overworking.
Okay, Pete, we'll give you a radar vector on this one. If you'll go over just directly east of Bench Crater, and you can continue on east until you're just about directly opposite the limb, and then a couple more steps ought to take you right to Halo Crater.
I just discovered that I gave you the wrong name of the crater they're going to next. I thought the Halo Crater was right next to Sharp. They're now going back to Halo Crater, which is a large, very old depression immediately to the south of the Surveyor Crater, back at the upper body of the snowman.
Red, is it named Halo? I believe it's named Halo Crater because the outline is comparatively vague, isn't it?
That's a very, very old depression, which makes it a fuzzy or halo-like. Have a halo-like appearance in pictures. There is another small depression like this up near Sharp, and I misinterpreted it.
As you move across there, what you're doing now, and what you had there back there at Sharp Crater.
They want them to comment on their boot.
Sink in anywhere near it, but now crossing some of my own tracks, and the toes sink in a bit, Pete, as you push off. You land flat footed so your heels don't sink in, but as you push off with your toes, they sink in down about 3 inches. Your heels are only sunk in perhaps an eighth of an inch.
Roger, thank you, Al.
Kick off on your toe.
Okay. Al Bean.
Every time he lands, he sends a little particles spraying out ahead of him and beside him and everywhere else, and they go out just as they maybe 2 feet to 3 feet around him. Okay, we're back at Bench Crater.
They're now traversing back to the east, and if you could understand Al's description of how the surface appears as they impress their feet into the surface, they were asked to comment on their footprints. When their feet come down, the heels don't sink too deep. However, the toes, as they push on forward, go down about 3 inches in this very soft lunar material.
It sounds reminiscent of trying to walk in beach sand in ordinary street shoes, doesn't it?
They've now moved back 150 meters to the east past Bench Crater and are proceeding for about another 200 meters from this point to the east, back toward the Surveyor Crater, and that's their traverse at this point. We'll be reporting more to you from Houston shortly.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world, with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. At the moment, astronauts Charles Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are again on the surface of the moon for their second moon walk. They've been out on the surface now about 1 hour and 43 minutes. We'll return to Houston and to the voices of astronauts Conrad and Bean following this summary of Late World News.
The Apollo 12 moon explorers are taking their second walk on the moon. Astronauts Charles Conrad and Alan Bean have been outside the landing craft now for more than an hour and 40 minutes, and they plan to continue walking the surface for at least another 2 hours. The two Americans rolled rocks down the sides of craters to see what would happen. Astronaut Conrad noted that they move slowly over the lunar soil. Astronaut Bean is taking a continuous series of photographs of the different kinds of rocks and surface materials. The astronauts say the surface color changes with the angle of the sun. At one point, when they turned over a rock, they found lighter colored soil underneath. They also discovered what appears to be lunar bedrock and what appears to be melted rock at the bottom of a crater. A bit later, the moon explorers will walk over to the American Surveyor spacecraft, which was landed on the moon about 3 years ago. President Nixon and Japanese Prime Minister Eisaku Sato will discuss economic issues when they meet at the White House Thursday. They held talks on Okinawa and Asian problems Wednesday. Defense Secretary Melvin Laird told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee of the specifics involved in President Nixon's plan to have the South Vietnamese assume a larger share in the Vietnam War. In Helsinki, American and Soviet representatives will hold the second working session of preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation Thursday. Britain's disarmament negotiator, Lord Chalfant, says the U.S.-Soviet strategic arms limitation talks in Helsinki may decide whether the world can survive this century without a nuclear disaster. The United States has condemned a resolution by the Egyptian National Assembly. The resolution blames the United States for failure to get a Middle East settlement. Israel and Egypt reported heavy exchanges of fire across the southern sector of the Suez Canal. Strikers in Italy and France battled with police in a wave of labor unrest in those countries, while a teachers' strike hit Britain. Police in Monrovia are searching for the assassin of the Reverend Dillard Brown, American Episcopal Bishop of the Diocese of Liberia. 28 nations submitted a resolution in the United Nations to make the seizure of civilian aircraft a punishable offense. A top international trade official says the nations of the free world should begin preparations for a new round of tariff cuts and trade liberalization. Oliver Long, the Director General of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, said GATT has been an overwhelming success. Miss Angie Brooks, President of the United Nations General Assembly, has proposed that international banking institutions form a Peace Corps to help banks in developing countries. That's the news. Gene Peterson reporting.
From the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, from our VOA Apollo News Center here in Washington, the Voice of America is bringing you live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That flight, now 133 hours and 17 minutes into its mission. The lunar landing craft Intrepid has been on the surface of the moon now some 22 hours and 44 minutes. We're in the midst of the second lunar walk, the second EVA by astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean. They've been out on the surface now about 1 hour and 47 minutes. They have been walking about the moon, making what we call geological traverses. Very soon, in about 13 minutes, if they follow the timeline, and they have been following their schedule very closely, they will move over to the crater, which is about 600 feet from the lunar landing craft, the crater containing the Surveyor 3 spacecraft, the craft that landed there about 2 years ago. They will go down the side of that crater, about 25 feet below the surface of the moon to reach this unmanned spacecraft. John Hammersmith, what are the dangers involved in going down the side of this crater? Isn't the soil, if we can call it that, looser and perhaps thicker on the sides of a crater?
There is an expectation, Bill. Excuse me. There is an expectation that the material on the sides of the crater will be dusty to a greater depth than has been the case on the surface proper. They have
worked with simulated situations which in anticipation of this here on the Earth, and while it may prove to be a little troublesome for them to go through it, they obviously are not expecting it to be dangerous. I suppose that the possibility does exist that they could get into something that's completely unexpected, mm-hmm. and perhaps begin to slip and slide or some such thing as this. The general slope, though, is not very great. It's only about 12 to 14 degrees. But as a precaution, Pete Conrad will stay up on top of the ridge, and he will be, Alan Bean will be tethered to him, much in using a system just like mountain climbers use.
Yes.
It's quite analogous to that. If there's also the possibility that in going down into the crater that it would break the communication link, and so Alan Bean will not be joined by Pete Conrad down in the crater unless, one, it is they are sure that they can handle themselves safely, and two, they can be sure that the communication link will not be broken for longer than about 5 minutes.
Well, Pete Conrad and Alan Bean have been giving us a running commentary, as they did during the first EVA some 12 hours ago. During the second EVA, the communications have been even clearer, very clear, in fact, excellent. I suppose the only drawback to communications is the fact that the color television camera went out very soon after the landing and the first EVA began.
We would not be seeing very much of what they're doing now anyway. They would be out of range of that camera. So this is really a radio reporting situation, Bill.
And speaking of reporters, I think perhaps we'd better go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston for more of the commentary from Pete Conrad and Alan Bean and our correspondent, Rhett Turner.
The astronauts have arrived at the Halo crater area. They've had some trouble identifying it because it is such a very gentle depression. But from their description of the dimples, Mission Control says they have arrived. Let's listen to this. We're listening to the comments of the space pilots as they arrive at the site of the Halo crater.
Okay, Pete, it's your call. You're the local experts. If you see a better location for that double core tube, go ahead.
They're going to take another core tube sample in this vicinity.
Right, crater, Houston. Pete, I think it's that area right over there. Halo is this first one right here, the little one, and then all those others are mixed over according to the chart. Okay, so we can just go over there and which one's Halo? This one right here? It's right, you see where I'm pointing? No. I see it, it's that one right over there. Okay, let's go. Okay. Yeah.
It sounds almost as though they're looking for something more clearly identifiable than this very gentle depression. Now, they're right on the edge of the rim of the larger crater in which Surveyor is located, and also the spacecraft, the lunar module, is only 200 meters from the lunar module itself, and the lunar module is on the rim, the northeast rim, northwest rim of the Surveyor crater, so it's in direct line of sight with Surveyor. They have already been down into two of the other craters in the area. They went down into the head crater. They went down into part of the bench crater, so it would appear that they have already experimented with the idea of climbing in this soft material. And so far, the crater material on the interior, the walls of the crater, very gentle slopes, has given them no trouble. And it's quite possible that this whole idea of the tether and the one astronaut staying on the top of the rim will be dispensed with, since they are within direct contact and direct sight of the limb. The lunar module is sitting right there on the edge of the very crater they're expected to descend and look at the Surveyor. They're on the south rim now of the Surveyor crater, examining a depression called Halo crater. A double core tube sample at this point. They're still continuing to follow the timeline.
60 and 110 on the film.
That's firm. Here, look at the chart a minute, Pete.
Yeah, okay.
The astronauts have spent days and days and days and months throughout the recent months, throughout the last two or three years, actually learning about geological material and the different types of material and rocks which are found on the Earth. And this has helped them in learning to identify materials on the moon. In the Sharp Crater area, we heard Al Bean.
Right now, we'd like you to go ahead and get the pans taken on the LMP's camera. You can either have Al do the pans or switch cameras. Your choice.
We heard Al do a very explicit description of of a piece of rocky material which had pits in it. Pits, P-I-T-S, small holes all over the rock. And he said it does not appear to be of a basalt origin, as much of that type material does on Earth. And he very carefully described it for the geologists in the back room of the Mission Control Center, who get into indirect communication through the capsule communicator. At this point, I believe it's Ed Gibson in the console seat, whom you will hear inject remarks from Houston.
Give it a go. I mean, your hands are the hammer.
We're going to drive one of the core tube samplers down into the surface. This is a hollow tube about 3 or 4 centimeters in diameter.
Be sure you give us the number of the lower core tube.
Houston asking for a number.
Okay, the lower core tube is number 3, I think. Yeah, 3, and the upper one's 1. Okay. Ready to pound it. Where are you going to drive it? Where would you recommend? Now, let's go over to this crater right here. Okay. All right, soft around those little... Right here, yeah. You want to take a picture?
The astronauts are now much closer to the spacecraft in direct line of sight. It's right in front of them, to the north of them, less than 200 meters away. And they are, in, they're of course then south of the limb itself and just southwest of the large prominent surveyor crater. They're working in an area, a gentle depression called Halo. And there were some interesting geological samples to be taken here. Now they're trying to get core tube samples, as I said, with that hollow round tube about 3 to 4 centimeters in diameter and some half meter in length. They have yet to be able to drive one of these core tubes down that deep, however. Al just reported he has one core tube complete. They're hammering, they have a special hammer with which to drive it into the surface.
When you hit on the side of it, like you have to do to get it within his suit, it knocks little chips of metal off the side of the hammer. I don't think that's too good.
Roger, Al, is it damaging the hammer or the core tube?
I'm afraid some of the fragments will damage the suit. Not damage it itself, you know, it's just breaking. Hey, I'm better left-handed than right. There goes another fragment. You see that, Pete? Yeah, Monty. Even hit with the front end, did some of them pop off?
Pieces of the hammer flaking off as they drive the core tube in. Flying all over the place.
Hey, up to the bottom of the hand grip portion of the upper tube. He's really driving that baby. Look at that hand. Look at that. Looks like it's got a coating over the hammer, Pete, and I'm knocking the coating. Instead of being a steel or aluminum hammer, it's a coated arrangement.
That's affirmative, Al. There is a coating on that hammer, and that's probably what you're knocking off. And also, we want to be sure to get the site there documented.
There is a metallic coating on the hammer which is flaking off. You can hear the capsule communicator also talking to Dick Gordon. There are two communicators there. One of them's talking to Dick Gordon up in the Yankee Clipper overhead.
Let me get the down to
There was the
spot.
The voice of Dick Gordon in the background talking to Mission Control on another circuit. Yankee Clipper is playing its very passive role of orbiting overhead, waiting to be the rendezvous ship in orbit over a day from now.
You give them a little pan or something so they can see where this came from. So you do it. I don't have that much film. Okay. Why don't I just trade you cameras? That's probably the smart way. All right. Hey, would you lift mine off when you sure will? I can't pull those things right. You tend to vacuum weld a little bit or something, I think. And you hold that one. But that's about to come apart. I'll be darned if it isn't. I'll fix the whole damn there. Back. Fine, I... It did come apart. It did come apart. Son of a gun. Well, that kind of bombed out. I'll tell you what, the only thing we... Oh, it broke. It did break. Well, I'll tell you what happened, Houston. The nut that holds the handle of the camera on broke off, and so the handle's free, but that's okay. We'll just carry it around. Let me ask you a question.
Roger, we got you. We understand that the nut broke, but the camera's still usable, right?
This
yeah, and your nut loops too, Pete. Stay there. Let me tighten it up for you.
This is a nut holding a handle on one of the cameras.
We knew that. We should have watched it more carefully, honey. Can you help do that yourself?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to do it.
Yeah.
Let me go put this hammer up in this camera somewhere and put that back. There goes the bracket, but that's okay. Go back to camera.
I believe this is the Hasselblad mounted on the front of the spacesuit that Al Bean has.
You're going to have to help me get this camera off. I
don't
get it off.
There's no need to get it off now.
If not, the camera to which he's referring would be the... gold stereo pair camera. I believe it's the Hasselblad, though, that's mounted on the front of the spacesuit.
You've got to take the surveyor picture, so why don't I give you the camera?
Okay, that's good enough.
They're swapping cameras.
He's got 50 pictures or so. Watch it. Make sure it takes a picture each time it turns.
Okay.
And just, why don't you, the camera,
I'll tell you what,
well, here, I'll hold it. You take this one off.
Okay, you got that camera. Take this one off. Let me take it off, and I'll tighten the nut. And I'm going to tip it down a little bit.
Damn it, I'll hold that down.
There you go.
Each of them has one of these still cameras mounted on the EMU, the small monitoring unit for the life-giving backpack that's on their chest. Apparently they're going to swap cameras now. As Al Bean reported, a nut came off a bolt on a handle on his camera. And this caused the handle to be very loose. He says he could go around and hold the handle, and still make the camera operate, however.
Well, why don't you carry it? That's what I'd do, carry it or something. But I got too much other stuff. Let me carry part of it or something. Okay, let me go pull out the cord tube.
No, I'll tell you what, we can always take the magazine off this and put it on the other one.
That's what we can do, I guess.
Yeah, we just drop it in here.
Al suggesting that possibly they could just change magazines on the camera that Pete is carrying.
Take the cap right here. Okay.
Al reminded himself that he needed to pull out the core tube, which he drove into the surface here near the Halo crater, some 200 meters south of the lunar module. They've now conducted in the past 2 hours and 2 minutes. They've been outside that long. A traverse ranging northwest over 150 meters, and then about 100 meters around to the south, past the head of the crater configuration known as Snowman. Then they moved on to the west, another 150 meters beyond this, to what is called a new crater on this ancient thing called the moon. They called it Sharp Crater. Geologists knew that it must be youthful because of its sharp features, which have appeared in earlier photographs from lunar orbit. They have examined the Sharp Crater, taking samples all along the way, and then they have traversed in a straight line from this Sharp Crater, which was some 400 meters to the west, back down to the east, next to the Surveyor Crater, returning closer home, and are examining an area called Halo Crater now, which is just about, according to Mission Control, they are 300 and... They went 366 meters, meters away in direct line of sight distance from the lunar module. Right now, they're about 180 to 200 meters due south of the lunar module.
Hey, this ain't gonna work, Jane. Fine. Well, see that.
This is called a geological traverse. The exploration of the surface, gathering material for scientists on Earth to examine. The second site on the moon to be so visited by American astronauts.
Well, I drove a nice core tube in there.
He says...
Well, it doesn't look any different, though, to the eye. Halfway there.
Al says it appears to be a nice sample there. It doesn't appear too different to the eye, however. He apparently drove this one pretty deep into the ground. They have yet to be able to depress them all the way down into the surface and fill them completely.
Yeah. Oh. Can you haul a camera in?
Sure, I can just slip one in if you slip this up.
The portable life support system's working perfectly. They periodically monitor the devices on a small chest indicator instrument. And the voice communication, very clear. All of the reception on Earth apparently has been more finely tuned than on the first EVA period a day ago.
Oh, wait, hold it right there.
That's Al Bean saying, wait, hold it right there.
Attaboy, let it go. Thank you.
Anytime the astronauts say something...
There.
Anytime they say something, their voices actuate a small transmitter device on the back.
Tight enough? Yeah. Okay.
We hear them just as it's happening right back here on Earth.
I get it. Okay.
He's mounting the shovel back on the tool carrier. They apparently are working with the hand tool carrier. They mount a shovel there.
Hey, we copy that. You finished the core tube? Is that a firm?
Shovel, tongs, hammer.
We got a double core tube and all put together correctly.
They've got a double core tube sample.
Have you gotten the panorama?
Get some more. No, I'm going to get Al to do that right now. He's using my camera. His camera's had it.
That's Pete.
With the handle off it and everything, yeah, by the time we got done hammering it, we got dirt all over the lens. They run out of film. We have to have another magazine with us. Or we could
take change that. We'll just take that off.
Oh, we can do that, or...
Well, don't want to, but if we have to, I guess we can.
Okay, let me start this pan. 74.
74 it is.
Now they're panning the one good camera around and taking a panoramic view of still pictures, a series of still pictures in all directions from this point.
You're 2 hours and 7 minutes into the EVA. And we show you leaving Halo at around 2:15, and now that's for a four-hour EVA. We've extended you 30 minutes for a total EVA of 4 hours. We'd like, before you go on, to have a good EMU check and sit down and regroup and figure out a plan of attack on the surveyor. One thing we would like to make sure is that you remain away from directly below the surveyor as you move up to it. That is, move up to it on one side or the other, either north or south.
There's a new instruction.
We concurred with that. We were talking about it last night. We've got to approach it from the side.
Roger.
Mission Control has recommended now that they plan for a four-hour extravehicular activity period. They are extending the length of stay on the moon. And now...
Pete, pan's complete. Probably ought to get rock, one of these rocks here and just throw it in.
Yeah,
I think we ought to. How about, you want to get this one?
Sure, one in for a sample bag.
They're going to put one of the rocks in the sample bag. They have the hand tools stowed back on the carrier. They're just about through with those. And they were instructed, of course, as you heard from Mission Control, to rest, to check the EMU, to check the condition of the life support system thoroughly. And they were told to sit down and rest a minute.
Yeah,